Welcome to episode 65 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of March 19th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In the news this week, a rapid recap of recent racing results. The Puerto case is over. No, it's not. SRAM's voluntary recall and Trips for Kids signs its 50th chapter. Following the news, a recap of last week's National Bike Summit in D.C., an interview with USA Today's cycling reporter, a new product, a new site on the internet, listener comments, shoutouts, upcoming rides, and of course, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitters at www.cambriabike.com. And now a new special offer for Fredcast listeners from CBO. Go to www.thefredcast.com and click the CBO link on the left-hand side of the page to get free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Cambria Bicycle Outfitters, they outfit the world. Well, welcome back to the Fredcast. It is great to be in front of this microphone again, and it's been way too long. My apologies to each and every one of you, and my thanks for your understanding and your patience. Let me give you a little bit of a rundown of what has gone on in this Fred's life over the last couple of weeks. Well, you remember we had the tour of California, and I'd planned to take a week off, and then I didn't, and I brought you a whole new show, and we talked a little bit about power meters, and I have continued to test those power meters, although I won't have my first report for you until next week's show, but trust me, it's going to be worth it. Well, then after that, I got all ready to do last week's show, and we had a major league computer crash at my office. Now, being the IT guy at the office, as well as a lot of other hats that I wear, I was tasked with fixing that problem, and by the time I got it fixed, I was on the plane and on my way to Washington, D.C. for the National Bike Summit, and that you'll hear about later on in the show. There I was at the National Bike Summit, all ready to do a show right there from my hotel room, as I've done time after time after time in the past, and then unfortunately we had a death in the family, and I had to rush home, and now I'm rushing out again tomorrow to go to the memorial service. It has been a totally mixed up couple of weeks. I know you all understand. You can't believe how guilty I've been feeling. So let's get on with the show. Now, before we get to the show, I want to talk about something that many of you have probably noticed on the Fredcast website. And that is that finally we're offering some custom apparel, and there's going to be more to come in the future. And our first item that we're offering is Fredcast socks. Cycling socks made by none other than the world famous Sock Guy. Go to www.thefredcast.com, and there's a button on the right-hand side of the page that will take you to the page where you can see the photos of the socks. I've already gotten a number of orders from you. We ordered a minimum quantity for this first round, so we'll see how it goes, but we're already watching those boxes start to empty out. So make sure that you place your order today, www.thefredcast.com. You can pay with Visa, MasterCard, PayPal. It's real simple. $9.95 gets you a pair of Fredcast socks by the Sock Guy. Of course, there's a link in the show notes. We appreciate your business and look for more apparel and more, well, more coming soon. Now, before I get to the news, I have one more thank you that I want to issue, and that's for all of those companies that provided the fantastic prizes for the random winners in our Fredcast listener survey. So I just one more time want to mention each of those companies and let you know how much we appreciate what they've done for all the listeners. So in no particular order, I want to thank Nike for donating a couple of pair of glasses, Skoch for the iPod mini remote, the Fredcast for Fredcast socks, Venture Design Works, that's the company that produces the GelBot water bottle, and finally Maxxis for donating tire levers. Thank you to all of those companies for providing those great prizes, and of course for the folks who won the iPod shuffles, those were donated by me, by the Fredcast. Thanks again to all of you for taking part in our first Fredcast listener survey. There probably will be more in the future and more chances to win great prizes. But now let's dive right into this week's news. Okay, this week's news we're going to do slightly different, especially when we talk about racing news, because not having reported on the news for the last couple of weeks, there have been a couple of races that have happened, and I just want to give you briefly who the winners were and some of the more important events that happened at each of those races. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about the UCI, the International Cycling Union, the folks who sanction international cycling events worldwide, including the UCI Pro Tour, which is the main event when it comes to professional cycling around the world. Well, the first thing is that the UCI has now decided that they're going to launch their own drug testing program. Now, we've talked in the past about how competitors in cycling events are tested. You have the stage winner, you have the race leader, and you have some random folks who are also tested at each of these races. The UCI, however, has now decided that they're going to have riders on the Pro Tour facing random drug tests during training and rest periods, including out-of-competition blood tests to detect blood doping and the use of blood-boosting drugs such as EPO. This is a big deal because it's now the UCI creating their own doping control program outside of the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA. I have no problem with the fact that they're going to be doing this testing. I think it's a great idea. I think that anything that we can do to get doping, or even just the perception of doping, out of professional cycling is a great idea. Here's my problem. We've talked before about the fact that some of these doping tests still are not infallible and can yield false positives. And beyond that, there's still the issue that Floyd Landis is dealing with in his doping case, where there's the possibility of lab misconduct and not following the rules and regulations that are set in place. And as I've said before, the cycling world, the sporting world in general, needs to develop tests and protocols which are as close to infallible as possible. So unless the UCI is going to be using new protocols, new tests, and new labs, then there's every possibility in the world that this doping control program, like previous doping control programs, can lead to errors and false accusations. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and we'll have to wait and see what comes out of the UCI in the weeks and months to come. And of course, I'm also curious to see what's going to happen at some of these major races, with the UCI now having their doping control and now WADA having their doping control. How will they reconcile the two programs? So there's a lot that's left to be said about this new UCI initiative, and we're just going to have to wait and see what happens and how it works. Now, speaking of somebody who got caught up potentially in a doping scandal that never really developed into anything, Jan-Ulrich Der Kaiser, the leader of the T-Mobile cycling team, who was banned from last year's Tour de France due to allegations that he might have been connected to the Operation Puerto affair in Spain, Jan-Ulrich announced several weeks ago that he has now officially retired from professional cycling. I'm curious to see what happens with the Puerto case and where it goes. And I have a story about that coming up. But if nothing comes of Puerto, then Jan will have been a tragic victim of that case. And while he is continuing to stay in professional cycling as an advisor to the Volksbank team, we no longer will see Der Kaiser out there on the course. He'll no longer have a chance to win yet another Tour de France. I just personally think it's a sad state of affairs when someone is accused, but not officially, only accused in the media by the officials of a sport, but no evidence is brought against them. And as a result of bad media coverage and of really trying and convicting somebody in the public eye, but not in a court of any sort, that because of that, they have to leave their livelihood and leave the sport that they love. I think that that's a sad state of affairs. And so I'm hoping that Jan is the last, but I'm not optimistic about that. Well, for those of you who are cycling fans, you know that this is the time of year when cycling season cranks up in Europe, and we get to see some early stage races, as well as some of the classic one-day rides and races every year. And the first stage race I want to tell you about today is one that happened a couple of weeks ago, and that's the Tour of Valencia. And it was won by Spaniard Alejandro Valverde from the Casse d'Epargne team. Of course, he's last year's second place finisher in the Tour of Spain. The next race, one of the great one-day classics, the Het Volk, and this was won by Italian Filippo Pozzato in a really late burst of speed, winning the race in Belgium, outsprinting Juan Antonio Flecha and Tom Bonin at the end. And Pozzato won this race, 125-mile race, in 5 hours, 4 minutes, 38 seconds, with Flecha 2 seconds behind and Bonin sharing the time. Fourth place went to Nick Nuyens from the Cofidis team and Belgium. And fifth, Australia's Stuart O'Grady, also at the same time. Two great races, two great victors. The next race I want to tell you about is Paris-Nice, the first race on the 2007 Pro Tour calendar, and one which quite possibly could have blown up in the faces of the teams, the cyclists, the organizers, the UCI, and of course, the fans. Now, you'll recall the flap that occurred several weeks ago when the organizers of Paris-Nice, the Amaury Sports Organization, or ASO, the same group that organizes the Tour de France, informed the UCI that it would not be inviting the Unibet team to its race. As a result of that decision, the UCI advised Pro Tour teams that they were no longer allowed to race at Paris-Nice at all. And then that decision was later reversed following discussions between the UCI and the race organizers. Thankfully, the race did go on with the Pro Tour teams in attendance, except for Unibet. The race concluded last Sunday with an early season win for the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team and the general classification winner, Alberto Contador of Spain. Contador won Thursday's fourth stage and then battled Gerold Steiner's David Rebellin for the GC lead. And going into the final stage, Contador was 6 seconds behind Rebellin in the GC and then broke away as the race headed up the final climb on Sunday to win the stage by 19 seconds over David Lopez Garcia of the Casse d'Epargne team, thereby clinching the win for himself and for Discovery. Following the race, Contador made sure to thank his Discovery Channel teammates, who together won 3 stages in the whole event. He was quoted as saying, quote, "I'm very satisfied with the team's work. This morning we were really impatient for the stage to start to show what we were capable of doing, and we had great fun all day." As for his own effort, Contador said, quote, "This is the greatest win in my career so far. I had won other stage races and other races, but the stature, the history, and the profile of Paris-Nice make it especially great." Now, as a footnote, or maybe even perhaps the most important feature of this victory for Contador, it should be noted that he is an incredible comeback story, not too unlike Saul Raisin, because back in 2002, Contador had a near-fatal stroke at the Tour of Asturias, and he was in a coma for 3 weeks. So to come back and to win a major stage race like this is a huge accomplishment, and to me, extremely inspirational. So at the end of this year's Paris-Nice, the final general classification, of course, first place went to Alberto Contador from Discovery Channel. Second, David Rebellin from Gerold Steiner. Third, Luis Leon Sanchez from Casse d'Epargne. Now, at the end of this race, Contador is leading the Pro Tour standings with 56 points. Second, David Rebellin from Gerold Steiner. And of course, third, Luis Leon Sanchez, mirroring this first race of the season. And of course, we'll be following the Pro Tour standings all throughout the year from now all the way to the end of the Pro Tour season to see who finally wins the 2007 Pro Tour Championship. Well, the second race on this year's 2007 Pro Tour calendar is Tirreno Adriatico, going on in Italy as we speak. And at the moment, the leader of this year's general classification in the Tirreno Adriatico is Andreas Klöden of Germany, There's one more stage yet to go in this year's race, and I will bring you the results next week, letting you know who won this year's race. It should be noted that Tyler Hamilton from the United States is in this year's race, but unfortunately had to retire about 108 kilometers into today's penultimate stage after an early crash, and also he and several of his Tinkoff teammates have been suffering with a bout of the flu over the last couple of days. So it makes a certain amount of sense for him to step out of the race right now and recover as much as he can and get on to his next race. So Tirreno Adriatico results next week. Stay tuned. Well, since last summer, we've been talking about a case here on the Fredcast, and I think all cyclists have been talking about it. It's a case out of Spain that became known as Operation Puerto, or Operación Puerto. Now, perhaps you're new to the show, or perhaps you're a new fan of professional cycling, so let me just give you a quick rundown on what Operation Puerto is all about. There was a doping investigation that occurred last May, in which an alleged blood doping network was discovered at the Madrid clinic of a doctor by the name of Eufemiano Fuentes, and he was considered to be the overall mastermind of this network. And in the probe, it was alleged that more than 55 cyclists out of almost 200 athletes who were being treated by the doctor may have been involved in doping. As a result of this, a great many cyclists were banned from the 2006 Tour de France, including frontrunners, contenders, Ivan Basso and Jan Ulrich. And there are those who say that as a result of those two riders having been banned from the Tour de France, Floyd Landis was able to win. Now, I don't buy that. I think that Floyd had the talent all on his own, and he had the team to do it. Nevertheless, there are those who are definitely saying that. Well, this case has been ongoing for quite some time. And as I mentioned earlier, Jan Ulrich has now retired as a result of the Puerto allegations. Yet, no formal charges were brought against Jan Ulrich, Ivan Basso, or many of the other riders as a result of the Puerto investigation. And the reason for that is that several months ago, the Spanish courts essentially sealed the evidence in the case and said that it would not be released to national cycling sanctioning bodies in other parts of the world until Spain's cases were fully adjudicated. Well, now a judge in Spain has ruled that this case is over and has dismissed the case, primarily because when it occurred, there were no anti-doping laws on the books in Spain, and also because it wasn't damaging the public health. Although, as Carlton Reed from Bike Biz mentioned on today's issue of the Spokesman podcast, well, it certainly would have the potential to damage the health of those riders. So it seemed like last week this case was over. It had been dismissed, and that was it. No more Puerto case in Spain. But then a Spanish magistrate has lodged an appeal against the case's dismissal, and now we start all over again, and we have to wait for the higher court in Spain to determine whether or not to reinstate the case or to affirm the dismissal. Now, hypothetically, even if this case is indeed over and Spain decides that there will be no more reinstatement of the case in Spain, that is actually going to open up dozens now of other cases and dozens of other cans of worms, because now the evidence that's in this case will be released to all of the other countries and all of their sanctioning bodies so that they can now open individual investigations into each of the cyclists and other athletes who were implicated in the Puerto affair. So even if this case is over, it is not dead, and we will hear much, much more about it in the weeks and months to come as all of these individual countries go after, or potentially go after, each of these individual athletes. This case still has legs, and now the legs are going to be moving all over Europe and the Americas while we watch all of these other cyclists get skewered. There's no doubt that this is going to be interesting and that it's going to go on for quite some time. Well, here's a story that occurred a couple of weeks ago, actually, right around the time of the Tour of California, but I have not had a chance to cover it here on the Fredcast, and I'm doing so because if you haven't heard about it and you own one of these products, I think it's important that you know about it. Back in February, SRAM decided to do a voluntary recall of some of their brakes. And initially it was a small recall, and then they expanded it to include more brakes. Originally it was just the front brake calipers, and then they decided to recall their rear brake calipers. So I'm going to read to you from their recall notice. SRAM Corporation has announced a recall of a limited number of Force labeled front and rear brake calipers. The issue here is that there could be a failure of the mounting bolt when it's installed onto the front fork or onto the rear triangle on your frame. The mounting bolt could fail, causing the brake caliper to detach from the fork or the rear triangle. And of course, if that happened, it could get stuck in your wheel and you might lose control of your bike. So the products that are affected are the SRAM Force Road brake calipers, front and rear. But if you have SRAM Rival front or rear brakes, those are not affected. I've put a link in the show notes to the official SRAM technical bit that will give you the information that you need that will tell you how to identify these brakes. But specifically, if there's no date code on your brakes, it's one of the affected models. If the date code is from the 1st of June 2006 through the 15th of September 2006, then that is affected. And there's a further date code range from 35T6 and then a bunch of numbers after that all the way to 39T6. So if you have any of these, SRAM recommends that you replace both the front and rear brake caliper assemblies. Contact your local SRAM dealer or SRAM Corporation themselves in order to get this taken care of. So I realize that this is about a month old, but something that we haven't had a chance to cover here on the Fredcast. And you know I like to bring you these recalls. So if you have any of these brakes, please get them replaced as soon as possible. Well, from racing and doping to suing and just plain being a dope, I have a story I have to bring to you because, you know, the cyclist in this story does not come out looking good. And sometimes us cyclists can be accused of being apologists for other cyclists. And this was a story I had to bring you because there's no way I can see being apologist for this cyclist. The cyclist involved here is a gentleman by the name of Dr. Alexander DeLugi, who's 54 years old and who lives in New Jersey. And he sued what was then 11-year-old Lauren Ellis for pain, suffering, and loss of income after they collided on a bike path in Chester Township on October 19th, 2003. And I want to thank the folks over at the Cyclicious blog for bringing this to my attention because this is something that sort of bugged me. Here's the situation. Dr. DeLugi is cycling on a path and he sees up ahead of him 11-year-old Lauren. And Lauren's inline skating, and so he paces her, according to testimony, for about 400 feet before he decides that he's going to pass her. He said he rang his bell a bunch of times, and as he approached her from behind, he yelled, "Watch out!" And when she didn't seem to hear him, he decided that she drifted over into his side of the road, and finally, when she turned to look at him in response to the noises that he was making, she moved further in his path. They collided. He broke his collarbone. He had a bunch of other injuries and decided to sue the 11-year-old girl for the accident. Well, she's now 15 years old, and the jury didn't take long to deliberate and decided that she was not at fault in the accident. As a matter of fact, one of the folks who was involved in the trial said, quote, "She didn't do anything wrong. She's 11 years old. 11 years old. She was rollerblading the way you're supposed to do it." Well, the doctor's lawyer said that even though it appeared to be, quote, an oddity that an adult was suing a child, under the law, children do bear responsibility for their actions. But I got a question for all of you out there. How many times have you been on a bike path or a multi-use path and you've seen kids, whether they're rollerblading or walking or riding their bikes? You know that as the adult, or at least you should know if you have some common sense, that as the adult, it's really your responsibility to make sure that you see and avoid the kids because the kids just don't have the years that you have, the experience that you have, and quite honestly, the maturity and the common sense that you have as an adult to make sure that they avoid you. So you slow down and you do everything that you can to make sure that the kids stay safe and also that you yourself stay safe. So from my perspective, there really was no reason for this case. It was an accident, pure and simple. It's entirely possible. Now, I wasn't there, so, you know, I don't want to get sued or anything, but it's entirely possible that the doctor may have passed too quickly. I don't know all the facts of the case, but it seems to me, as it did to the jury, that an 11-year-old shouldn't be responsible for his injuries. Interesting to see what Lauren's mother had to say when asked how this made Lauren react when she was out rollerblading after the accident occurred. And her mother said, quote, "It's made her more wary. We grew up in a different time." And then her husband interjected, "When accidents were accidents." And quite frankly, I couldn't agree more. This was an accident, pure and simple. I do feel bad that the doctor had his injuries, but I don't see that there was any reason for a lawsuit in this case. And again, just bring it to your attention, because sometimes us cyclists do have to stand up for what's right, not just for other cyclists. And finally tonight, sort of a feel-good story for you. In Rochester, New York, there's a group called Friends Helping Friends, and they are now the newest and 50th chapter of a group called Trips for Kids. If you're not familiar with Trips for Kids, this is a fantastic charity and a fantastic cause. Trips for Kids takes low-income, inner-city, and otherwise at-risk youth. They take them out of the city, and they let them go for mountain bike rides. And according to the press release from Trips for Kids, these mountain bike rides often turn out to be the rides of their lives. Now, Trips for Kids has touched the lives of more than 33,500 kids during its 19-year history, and their organized mountain bike rides help kids build confidence, empower them to reach their full potential, and at the same time, teach them about environmental awareness. 15-year-old Kaye Citern from Oakland, California said, quote, "Trips for Kids helped me discover that I'm stronger than I thought. I was scared at first, but I kept trying and got better. And we made it to the top. I still can't believe that I did it." Trips for Kids is a great charity. I will definitely put a link in the show notes so that you can check it out for yourself. Congratulations to Friends Helping Friends and to Trips for Kids for signing up their 50th chapter. And I hope that for those of you who have the ability, the capability, I hope that this is something that you might want to get involved in. Go ahead and check it out. The link's in the show notes. And that's going to do it for the news for this week's episode of The Fredcast. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, and for those of you who also visit the Fredcast.com website, you may know that last week I attended the League of American Bicyclists National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C. Now, the Bike Summit is put on by the League of American Bicyclists in conjunction with Bikes Belong. So who are these two groups? Well, the League of American Bicyclists is, for all intents and purposes, if you're American, your voice for cycling in Washington, D.C., talking to your government about the issues that you care about and whether those issues are better bike lanes or complete streets or better access to trails, because IMBA was there as well, the International Mountain Biking Association, or it even could be tax incentives for people who commute by bikes, or tax incentives for businesses who make facilities available to those who commute by bikes. Well, that's what the League of American Bicyclists is. And the executive director, Andy Clark, remarked to me that the League is almost like the cyclist version of the NRA. They're the people who talk to our government about the issues that concern cycling. Bikes Belong, on the other hand, is an organization made up of manufacturers and companies in the bicycle industry who are there to put forward cycling advocacy all around the country. So this was a chance for cycling advocates, for cyclists, for individuals, for the media, and for manufacturers to get together in a setting where everyone could talk about cycling and cyclists and cycling rights. So what happened there? Well, I have a really good discussion with Tim Jackson, one of my fellow spokesmen on the Spokesman podcast, this morning on the show, and we'll be posting that show in the next day or so. And I recommend that you give a listen, because he and I talked about the various things that went on there and about our impressions of the event. You can listen to that at www.the-spokesmen.com. And of course, I'll put a link in the show notes, and there's always a link to the spokesman on the fredcast.com website. But just a couple of the highlights that I wanted to mention to you, starting off with a very inspirational speech that we all heard from Louisville's mayor on Wednesday afternoon at lunch. And he talked about how he was inspired by a trip to Colorado and the cyclists that he saw and the facilities for cyclists that he saw there. He was inspired to turn Louisville into one of America's most bicycle-friendly cities. It was a very inspirational speech. I'm hoping to get the approval to be able to put it into the Fredcast feed, because I think it's something that you'll find very interesting. Following his speech, we were honored with a surprise visit by Floyd Landis. And what was great about Floyd's visit was that he wasn't there to talk about racing. He wasn't there to talk about doping. He was there to talk about riding a bicycle and what riding a bicycle has meant to him. And there's a question and answer session, and it just felt down homey. Everyone in the room was into cycling, was into riding bikes, and it was so great to hear Floyd talk about his early days in learning to become a cyclist and about his first bikes. It was fantastic. Later that day, we heard from Trek president John Burke. And John Burke has become, well, sort of like the Al Gore of the bicycle industry, because he gave a preview of a presentation that he'll be giving at next week's Taipei Cycle Show about what bicycle manufacturers should be doing to put forth an agenda of advocacy for cycling. And that if they do that, we can be a more inclusive sport, and we can bring more people into cycling. And I think we all want that. Now, on Thursday was the day when everyone visited their representatives and senators on Capitol Hill. And the day began with a breakfast with two of cycling's heroes on Capitol Hill. The first, Representative Earl Blumenauer, who's a Democrat from the state of Oregon, and he introduced his Bike Commuter Act. His Bike Commuter Act, now on the floor of the Congress, is intended to give incentives for people who commute by bicycle. Because whether you know it or not, there are tax incentives and breaks for people in this country who commute by alternate forms of transportation, be that mass transit or carpooling or vanpooling or what have you. But his act is looking to get tax incentives for individuals who commute by bike and for corporations who encourage individuals to commute by bike. Following Congressman Blumenauer's speech, we got to hear from Representative Jim Oberstar, who's a Democrat from Minnesota. And Oberstar was described time after time throughout the week as our hero on Capitol Hill. And there's no doubt that he is passionate about cycling and passionate about cycling advocacy. And he absolutely rallied the troops, and it was fantastic. Following that, everyone went out and they met with their representatives and their senators and put forth cycling's advocacy agenda. And everyone came back that evening to a party and a reception where they were so enthusiastic and so jazzed about the conversations that they'd had and the feeling that they had made a difference in the country and on Capitol Hill for cycling and for cyclists. The next day, there was a presentation by several companies, but spearheaded by Shimano, on the Coasting Program. And this is their attempt to make cycling much more inclusive and to come up with bikes that aren't necessarily for the cycling enthusiast, but that are good for transportation and good for fun and will bring more people into cycling. And as Tim Jackson rightfully said today on The Spokesman, this program has every possibility of creating more cycling enthusiasts and it sounds like a great attempt at bringing more people into cycling. The bottom line, I walked away from the National Bike Summit energized, inspired, and enthusiastic about the future of cycling here in the United States as well as elsewhere, and I was really pleased to see and meet the number of people who are out there fighting for our rights as cyclists. You know, you hear me all the time talking about problems with motorists and with pedestrians and with rules and regulations, and these are the people who are fighting for us to make sure that our rights are watched and looked after in Washington, D.C., and in states and counties and cities all over the United States. And I was really pleased and honored to be able to attend, and I hope that in the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to bring you some of the audio that I recorded at the event. I think that you'll be really pleased to hear what we heard at this year's Bike Summit. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that in addition to the coverage that I'll have here on the Fredcast and our coverage on the Spokesman podcast, I'd invite you to visit the bikeportland.org website, because that their coverage was some of the best that there was of this year's Bike Summit. And I've put a link in the show notes to where you can read every one of their posts and see all of the photographs that Bike Portland was able to collect during their week at this year's Bike Summit. Now, one of the people that I was honored to meet while I was in Washington, D.C., was the USA Today's cycling reporter, Sal Rubel. I've mentioned before here on the Fredcast how pleased I am every time I open up the USA Today and how good and complete their cycling coverage is, so that when I saw Sal, I took the opportunity to ask him for the interview, and here's what he and I discussed. I'm with Sal Rubel from the USA Today, and you've probably read some of his articles. Now, your title specifically, are you the chief cycling writer or sports writer? What do they call you?
Well, I'm an Olympics writer, and part of my Olympics beat is cycling, but it's sort of over the years grown into my dominant beat and the one I like to do the best.
Now, how did you get into cycling?
Well, I grew up in Colorado, and I went to school at the University of Colorado back in the early 70s, and we rode our 10 speeds around, and one of the things that probably would have changed my life if we had discovered beach cruisers. I think it would have been my name on the bike instead of Gary Fisher's, and we just couldn't figure out how to keep these Moticons from breaking into pieces while riding on trails out there. Had we solved that one, then I'd probably be doing something else.
Now, from there, did you get into competitive cycling, mountain biking? Tell me a little bit about that.
No, not really at that point. I think, after I finished school, I went the journalism route, and that was pretty tough, kind of, working a lot of hours, and I took up riding horses, actually, and then when I got done riding horses, when my last horse couldn't go anymore, I looked around and I thought, well, maybe I need to get back on the bike, and the mountain bike was the closest to riding a horse on trails, and I started doing that, but I didn't quite really get it, and then in 1995, I saw a Specialized Bicycle Company's website and had a thing where you could ask a question. I sent a question and I said, I'm a trail runner and part-time cyclist, but I'm, what would be the best cross training for me to do? And a guy named Tom Hillard emailed me back and said, you ought to try mountain biking and come out to Super Cup Camp, and we'll show you how to do it. And I went out to Phoenix, to South Mountain, and they gave me a real mountain bike, which I never really had before, and they introduced me to this guy, and they said, here's this guy named Ned, and he's going to show you how to ride a mountain bike. And, of course, it was Ned Overend, and over the course of 3 days at South Mountain, I learned how to ride mountain bikes with Ned Overend. And that Friday, I raced in a mountain bike time trial at Cactus Cup, and Saturday I raced in the cross-country race, and I was hooked after that.
Are you a road cyclist as well?
I do road cycling a lot, mostly just for training for the mountain bike. I love mountain biking, and I love cyclocross, and I tolerate the road because it's a more efficient way of getting fit.
Okay, so just to paint a picture, he's wearing a USA Cyclocross World's Team t-shirt. He's wearing his cycling shoes. He's got his cycling clothes on. He's carrying around his helmet. It's a great way to go to a meeting. Tell me how it is that you started writing for cycling in the USA Today. And when you first started doing that, were you doing as much as you're doing today?
I think we did probably because if you take out the doping aspect, which has dominated a lot of the coverage I've done, we're probably doing about the same. And I try to separate the doping stuff from the cycling stuff because, you know, it's not what the sport is all about. I'd say going back to the mid-90s, I really did a lot more mountain biking coverage at that time. And then with the Lance era, we started covering the Tour de France, and I've been to the Tour de France 7 times. So I've done that. I've been to the Giro and the Classic. So as our audience kind of moved towards road cycling during the Lance era, then that's where our emphasis was. And I've covered it at the Olympics as well.
Now, for somebody who travels as much as I do, I get the USA Today in front of my door quite often. And I've seen an increase in cycling coverage, a lot of it with your byline, of course. Do you see that as a trend? I don't see it in other major dailies. How is it that the USA Today seems to get it more than a lot of major dailies?
Well, I think a lot of it is we do a lot of market research. So we looked at our audience and found that, the cycling profile, probably late 20s to mid 50s professional, mostly male, but a lot of women as well, high income, lots of disposable income, and people who like to utilize their off-work time to the max, and cycling really fits into that. So really, if you compare, sort of the USA Today reader is probably also a cyclist as well. And, you know, these people buy the paper, and sort of it's a good match, and we found that it's one of our more popular beats.
With everything that we've been talking about here when it comes to cycling advocacy and making it more accessible to the general public, what sort of trends do you see in the next 5-10 years in getting cycling to become more mainstream?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with just things like we do, covering it and letting people know it's a legitimate sport, it's a legitimate recreational activity. But I think we'll start to see as this mass of people who love cycling, who want to cycle, begin to realize that their communities are not set up to accept their lifestyle, and they're going to demand changes to their communities to adapt to the cycling lifestyle, to a more recreational adventure lifestyle that people want to have. And as America gets older, the amazing thing is I think cycling will come on stronger. Now, that then leaves us to, we need to bring in the younger generation, and I think that'll happen.
We were talking a few moments ago about the Tour of California. We were both there. Do you think events like the Tour of California will help bring cycling more into the mainstream, more into the public eye?
Yeah, and I can give you a personal example. My youngest brother, Mark, lives in Fresno, and he came out to see me in San Francisco for the prologue. And he and his family just loved the race. They had never been to a professional cycling race before. They loved it. And then towards the end of the week, he shows up in Santa Clarita to see the race there. And then he emailed me last week that he saw the Central Valley Crit in Fresno. So here's a guy who had never been to a pro bike race, has seen 3 in the last month and is hooked on it. And I think the more that people see high-level racing, it's an aspirational thing. They say, that looks really neat, and it's something I can do. And that's the beauty of cycling is, you can't go to Yankee Stadium and hit home runs, but you can go to France and ride the Tour de France course. You can go to California and ride the Tour of California course. So although you may not do it with the power and the speed of the top pros, you can do it yourself and have the same experience. And that's unique in sports.
And I think that's a great message. Thanks, Sal, for your time.
No problem. Glad to do it.
A couple of new things I wanted to tell you about this week that I found out there on the internet that I thought you might find interesting. You know, I joked with you, well, sort of half-joked with you a couple of weeks ago when VeloNews was looking for a new editor about whether or not you might want this cool job in the bike industry, which I think would be an awesome job. Well, maybe you're not quite ready to become an editor of a major international cycling publication, but maybe you do want a job in the bike industry. There's a new site on the internet. It's called getabikejob.com. And of course, I've put a link in the show notes like I do with everything I talk about here on the Fredcast. And what getabikejob.com is for is it's a site where individuals and companies who have jobs available in the bike industry can post those jobs. And for individuals who are looking for a job in the bike industry, you can go on there and find a job in the bike industry. Now, at the present time, there are not a whole lot of things listed on getabikejob.com. But just to give you an example of some things that are in here, there's the executive director position for the Indiana Bicycle Coalition in Indianapolis, Indiana. And there are a bunch of retail positions listed there as well. Not a whole lot listed on the site right now, but it's an interesting idea and one which I hope really takes off. So go ahead and check that out at getabikejob.com. Now, the next thing I wanted to mention to you is a new product which I found out there on the internet. And these are bib shorts from Pearl Izumi. So, you know, really, what's the big deal about bib shorts from Pearl Izumi? We've seen those, you know, forever and ever and ever. But these are $500 bib shorts. They're called the Vertex MP3 bib short, and it includes an integrated MP3 player, which is Bluetooth compatible and offers up to 16 hours of MP3 storage. I don't know about you, but $500 for shorts, whether they include an MP3 player or not, that just seems a little steep. However, one of the nice things is $100 from the purchase of each pair of Vertex MP3 shorts will go to the Davis Finney Foundation. So great cause, but still I'm not entirely sure that I'm ready to spend $500 on a pair of shorts. What's really kind of neat is the controls for the MP3 player are in the left leg of the shorts. So you just reach down sort of on your left quad, and that's where you can find your play, pause, and volume controls. It's kind of neat. Probably be fun to play with, but I'm not quite sure that I'm ready to spend $500 on shorts / MP3 combo. But go ahead and check it out. I did put a link in the show notes to where you can find it on the Pearl Izumi website. At this point in the show, I want to give a shout out to Ann Cowan. Now, Ann Cowan is the friend of listeners Randy and Seba in Tennessee, and they wrote to tell me the following story. Our friend Ann Cowan is a 57-year young woman from Bristol, Virginia, who has embarked on quite an adventure. She began on March the 8th, starting a 58-day, 3,000-plus-mile cross-country journey from San Diego to St. Augustine, Florida, by bicycle. Anne is traveling with 30 other women, all over the age of 50, and the average age of the group is 58. The ride is organized by Women Tours and is an optional fundraiser for the fight against breast cancer. Participants are encouraged to seek sponsors to contribute directly in their honor to an agency that helps fight breast cancer. Since 1988, this tour has collected over $250,000 to help fight this disease, and Anne's ambition is to raise money for a local affiliate of the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. And in Anne's own words, quote, "Everyone has been touched by breast cancer in one way or another. Chances are that you have a family member, friend, neighbor, or coworker with the disease. One woman in eight will be diagnosed with breast cancer in her lifetime. If you know eight women, then you will know someone with breast cancer. Sad but true, I personally know over a dozen women who have had breast cancer, who have endured treatment, and have survived. Some have not. I'm making this ride for all of them. For Anna, Agnes, Susan, Susie, Karen, Kathy, Debbie, Pat, Linda, Kit, Wanda, and all the others I have not mentioned. As they embarked on their journey into the unknown world of breast cancer and the challenges of treatment, I embark on my own journey and my own challenges across the United States. I do it for each one of them." I put a link in the show notes to the website where you can watch Anne's journey across the United States. So Anne, I salute you and the other women that are on the journey with you. I wish you Godspeed and good luck, not only in your journey across the United States by bicycle, but also in your efforts to help end breast cancer and its devastating effects. Well, last but not least, I want to bring you an upcoming ride, and this one comes to us courtesy of listener Michael Down Under. And this is the Melbourne Autumn Day Ride, and this takes place April 1st, 2007. Of course, there's a link in the show notes to where you can find the information about the ride. But in a nutshell, there are three routes, and all three routes are within the Macedon Ranges region. For those of you who want to ride on the road, there's a 60K and a 110K road ride. And then for those of you with mountain bikes, there's a 65K mountain bike ride. All routes are fully supported with route maps, marshals, signs, and emergency services, and food options are certainly available. And our listener, Michael, took part in this last year, and he said there were all shapes and sizes of riders, racers to commuters, kids to every age imaginable. He said that it was a safe, nice day out within easy reach of Melbourne. He says it's about 1 hour away and that it's put on by the Melbourne Bicycle Touring Club. Go ahead and check it out. If you do the ride, have a great day. Spring is finally here. Let's all get out on our bikes and enjoy it. Well, that's going to do it for the show for this evening. Thanks so much for staying subscribed and for being patient as we got through all of the trials and tribulations of the last couple of weeks and months. I'm glad to be back giving you a full, regular dose of the Fredcast. Expect to hear me again next week and for many, many weeks thereafter. In the meantime, and I am finally catching up on my email, as many of you know, if you'd like to send me an email, please do so. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And of course, your email can be text or audio. And I have to be honest with you, this evening I had planned on bringing you a couple of audio comments that I got from some listeners through the Odeo link. And I seem to be having some problems with the Odeo audio. So in the meantime, if you'd like to send me an audio comment, please send it in your email or use the Fredcast listener hotline. That's area code 206-203-FRED. And by the way, if you'd think that a Skype voicemail account would be better with a Skype in number, let me know that too. I've been thinking about setting it up, but I'm not quite sure how many of you would use it. So just send me an email. Let me know if that's something that you're interested in. And that would be Skype voicemail or a Skype in number. Of course, you can always go to our website at www.thefredcast.com. Check out the blog entries there and check out the Fredcast forums. That's at forums.thefredcast.com. Finally, do me a favor, tell your friends, your cycling buddies, the folks in your club, when you're out riding about the Fredcast. We're always trying to build the audience and we appreciate you telling a couple of friends or going onto iTunes and posting a review about the Fredcast right there in iTunes. And of course, while you're online, do us a favor and go over to Podcast Alley and vote for the Fredcast so that we maintain up at the top of the ratings when it comes not only to cycling podcasts, but to all podcasts. I really appreciate your support. As we do every week, we close the show with some PodSafe cycling music, and the music normally comes to us, as it is tonight, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Now, tonight's music is one that I've heard on several podcasts over the last year or so. It is a song called Code Monkey, and it's by Jonathan Colton. It is definitely, it's got the beat that you need for cycling, but I think it's a funny song and one that I hope that you'll enjoy. This is for everyone out there, not only code monkeys who sit in a cubicle and write code all day, but anyone who's got a boss and just sometimes wants to maybe express a little bit more to that boss than common workplace decorum would allow. So I hope you enjoy Code Monkey. Again, thanks for listening, and I will be back next week with another regularly scheduled Fredcast. Until then, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey not saying out loud. Code Monkey not crazy, just proud. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man with big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey hang around at front desk till you buy you soda, bring you cup, bring you ice. You say no thank you for the soda, cause soda make you fat. Anyway, you busy with the telephone, no time for chat. Code Monkey have long walk back to cubicle. He sit down, pretend to work. Code Monkey not thinking so straight. Code Monkey not feeling so great. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man. Big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you. Coffee cake, take bath, take nap. This job fulfilling in creative way, such a load of crap. Code Monkey thinks someday he have everything, even pretty girl like you. Code Monkey just waiting for now. Code Monkey says someday, somehow. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man. Big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you.